And I'm very happy to take this opportunity to share with you about the recent trip that I made into Chile and to Argentina. Several had asked, what was I going to talk about tonight? They had read the report back there about the December trip into China. Several people had a lot of questions about that, and I'm always happy to answer any questions and talk about any of the trips. In January then, I went to South Africa. Had a very busy time there, working in three major areas. We went north first, working in the White River area. Then we came down to Johannesburg, and then I flew then all the way to the very southern tip, working down at Cape Town. One of the preachers down there made my picture one day. I took off my shoes and rolled up my pants and got out in the ocean, and I had 1 foot in the Indian Ocean and 1 foot in the Atlantic Ocean. And right at the southern tip right there where the two come together. But what we're going to try to do tonight is to talk to you about the trip. Just got back home just a few days ago. And talking about what took place in Chile and Argentina. Now Chile, of course, is that long, skinny part down that western coast there. That little yellow mark. And then Argentina, of course, is the great big green area. You'll see the red dot off to the right in Argentina, Buenos Aires. That's where I ended the trip. So I flew into Chile. I flew into Santiago. You can see that with the red dot over there in the yellow part. So I flew into Santiago, and we came all the way south down to where the third one from the bottom, you see where it says Valdivia. And so we worked with a couple of churches down in that area. Go back up north then. Before you get to Santiago, you'll see the town of Talca. And we were able to work with three churches in that area. And then we were able then to go then to Limache. And I don't even think it's on there. And then Valparaiso. And so... Now, one of the things that you have to learn if you're going to Chile and Argentina, same lesson I had to learn many years ago when for about 6 years I held gospel meetings in Belize. You have to learn to change your vocabulary on a couple of things, and I'm not talking about Spanish versus English. Is a lot of times somebody will say, "Where are you from?" They might think, if they don't know the accents, they might think you're from England, they might think you're from Europe, you might think that you're from Australia. Now, how would most of us typically answer? "Oh, no, I'm not from England, I'm American." Is that the way you would answer? And they let you know real quick, they're Americans too. You live in North America. They live in South America. And so they remind you real quick. Canada, United States, Mexico, all of Central America, all of South America, we're everyone Americans. And so you have to change your vocabulary real quick. You refer to yourself as being a North American. And that just eliminates a little bit of controversy. And so that's one of the things that we try to work on. Now, I went to Chile last February. And I took a brother with me from Bowling Green, and he worked as my interpreter, and he was scheduled to go back with me on this year's trip. And a family issue came up with his young daughter, and about 4 days before I'm ready to leave, he says, "Bob, I have to cancel." Great. I got a plane ticket that's non-refundable. There's nobody in Chile that knows enough English to interpret for me. What am I going to do? And so I wrote to Carlos, and he said, "Now, Bob, there is no way that I can translate. There's no way I can interpret. You're going to have to find somebody." Well, so I called upon one of my buddies from Colombia, Jaime Restrepo, but to try to buy a plane ticket from Colombia to get to Chile with just a 3-day notice, it got expensive. But the Lord allowed it to happen, and we were able to get the work done. This is Carlos, the preacher that is in Talco. This is his wife, Mary, and their two children. And again, neither of these children speak any English, but it's fun to walk with them down to the city park and go to the supermarket, and you just learn to smile at each other and point and see what kind of sign language you can figure out. But we just got along well, is that we had a great time together. Now, this is Jaime Restrepo. Let me get off the subject for just a moment. In 1978, Carlos Restrepo was arrested in Miami, Florida. He delivered drugs into the United States of America. And he delivered those drugs right into the hand of an FBI agent. And he was arrested. In prison one night, he made the comment, "I wish I could die." The guy in the cell next to him couldn't even see him, doesn't even know what Carlos looked like. But the guy in the cell next to him said, "I'd be afraid to die because I know I'd go to hell." And Carlos said, "I don't know anything about hell. Don't know anything about the Bible. Don't know anything about God." And so this guy said, "Well, I'm taking a Bible correspondence course from a Church of Christ in Kentucky." Said, "Maybe you ought to sign up and take that Bible course." And so Carlos did. He finished the course. He expressed his desire to be baptized, and that's something that's hard to accomplish inside of a federal prison. But after several weeks of trying to work with some of the senators and trying to work with the authorities at the federal prison, they finally allowed Carlos to be baptized. He became a model prisoner. He was so good, they called him in one day and said, "We're going to let you have an early meeting with the parole board." And they cut a deal with him. They said, "We'll let you leave prison under two conditions. You go back home, you go back to Bogota, Colombia, and you never come back to the United States of America again." He said, "No problem. I'll be happy to go home. I'm a Christian now." He was all excited, looking forward to going home and finding the local Church of Christ, placing his membership and seeing if he could grow spiritually. Except there was one problem. There wasn't a Church of Christ in Bogota, Colombia, South America. So now what's he going to do? So Carlos calls his brother, Jaime. Said, "Get over here. I'm going to teach you a Bible class. Bring two of your classmates with you." So Jaime brings some of his friends. Carlos calls some of his friends. And they had a Bible study the first night. Carlos decided, from what he had read in the book of Acts, when the church was very young, they studied the Bible every day. So Carlos decided that he would do that. Every night they had Bible studies. Before you know it, there were six Christians. They continued having Bible study every night. Before you know it, there were 12 Christians. They continued having Bible study every night. Before you know it, there were 25 Christians. They continued to study the Bible every night. Every new Christian would bring some of their friends in. "We need more people. Let's convert more people." Before you know it, there are 50 people. Before you know it, there are 75 people. Before you know it, they decided they needed to establish a second congregation on the other side of town. Did you hear me say that was 1978? Today, in Colombia, there are 68 churches of Christ. Starting with one man out of prison in 1978. That's the power of the gospel of Jesus when you're willing to use that power. But you see, their success is because that they met every night to teach the Bible, to try to convert people to Jesus. Jaime was the second convert in Colombia, South America. I worked with him last year when I went to Medellin in Colombia. He was my interpreter there. It was a joy to get to be with him this year. And so I was glad that he could make the sacrifice, and he had to reschedule a couple of gospel meetings in order to come and to work with me. A few years ago, I held a gospel meeting in Salem, Oregon, and I met this young gal, Heather Hafer. Her father is the preacher in Salem, Oregon, and her father and one of the elders went with us on the trip to Ghana last year. And Heather knows Spanish very well, and she said she would like to use her knowledge of Spanish to see if it could be used in the Lord's work. So I put her in touch with some of the Christians in Chile, and so she went there and got her a job teaching English at a university. So that's how that she's making her salary. She's an English teacher, but her real reason for wanting to be there is to teach Bible. And so she works with a lot of children. She has a lot of classes for teenage girls. She works with a lot of the women's Bible classes. And she is absolutely loving her time in Chile. She's now into her second year of being there. This is the church building for the brethren in Talca. It's not anything big. It's nothing fancy. But it serves the purpose. It has a big white wall. They don't have a screen like we have here tonight, but we were able to use the big white wall, and I took all of my PowerPoint lessons, and we convert them over then into Spanish. We used two computers so that I could read my notes in English, but then the brethren could see the PowerPoint all done in Spanish, and so this was one of the services for the Talca Church. In the morning, I had classes just for the men. We ended that at noon. I then had a 30-minute break. I could get something to drink or get something to eat real quick. I ended at 12. At 12:30, I started a class for teenagers. And so this is a group of the teenagers that came, and we had classes then for them until 2:30. And then we would have a gospel meeting in the evening for everyone of all age groups. I loved some of the streets. The trees all came over and met and provided beautiful shade, and I thought it was just very picturesque looking down through there. I loved the fresh fruit. I loved going to the market, whether it was watermelon or whether it was mango or bananas or peaches, apples. They had almost all kinds of fruit around the area. I did not like the price of gasoline, is that this is per liter, and so that figures out about $5.25 a gallon. This is going to another church then, down at Valdivia, and you have to climb up some pretty rugged steps to get to the top of the mountain. And when you get up to the top of the mountain, this is the nice little church building that they have built. I am happy to tell you that they built it with their own hands. I'm happy to tell you that when I was there last year, they told me what their goal was. They were trying to save enough money. Their contribution is very small. The contribution will not provide for many necessities other than their electricity. But they were trying to save enough money to buy a few bags of cement that they could later then build them a baptistry. I'm happy to tell you, when I got there this year, the baptistry has now been finished, and so now they're ready to move on then to another goal. They eventually want to add a classroom into the back of the building. This is the preacher. This is Marcos Munoz, and he has three of the greatest young boys that I feel that I have been privileged to be with in any country. They are some of the most spiritual young men. Now, Marcos is a truck driver. He works for the university. The sad thing is that there are many times that he is forced to have to work overtime. He's got to make enough money to pay the rent, pay the utilities, buy some groceries. And so he lives an hour away from the church building. And so sometimes he doesn't have enough money, and sometimes he doesn't have enough time that he can go to the midweek services. The brethren love him, and the brethren appreciate him if he can make it. But if he doesn't show up, then they go ahead with their Bible class, and they know that he will be there next Sunday. Marcos would love to quit his job at the university. He would need about $900 a month for a salary to allow him to work full-time with the church. He's a great man, and I love him. When you're up on top of the mountain, this is standing in the front door of the church building. You're looking over here into the Pacific Ocean. Now, where it gets its name, Valdivia, is that I am told that that comes from a word that talks about the fast-moving mist or fog. And so I made the one picture where I can look right out and see the ocean. I can see all the islands. In about 2 minutes, I see the big fog coming in. And in about another 2 minutes, it has completely covered the mountain, and you cannot even tell that the Pacific Ocean is out there. That's how fast it does move. This is something that I have trouble getting used to. This is a community tea. Now, it's not that they're short of cups. I mean, I've been in homes that I can look over on the counter and there's 20 cups sitting over there. That's just not the way you do things in Chile. Everybody shares one drink. You put your tea in there. You put your hot water in there. And then it's given to the first person at the table. As soon as you get to the bottom, you've emptied it. They put one more spoonful of sugar, one more spoonful of tea, fill it up with hot water, and pass it to the next person. When you're through, another spoon of sugar, another spoon of tea, you pass it to the third person. That one cup goes all over the house, and everybody drinks once, and now, do you want your second cup? And they just keep filling it up and just keep passing it. And now, see, that looks like a silver spoon. Really, it's a silver straw. And that goes to the bottom, and you fill it up with hot water, and then you suck through that silver straw, and that's how that you drink. And everybody shares the same cup and the same straw. This is inside the church building in Valdivia. Wonderful brethren. I was very pleasant. I liked the temperature because during the daytime it was sometimes hitting to the 90s. But at nighttime, man, it drops cold. It gets down to 78 degrees. And so they all get out their gloves and their hats and their scarves and they think they're going to freeze. And you can see every one of them are bundled up there. I thought, man, you want to go with me to Russia? It's going to be 14 degrees when I get there this coming week. And in the afternoon, I taught some classes for the ladies. Of course, I had to have Jaime with me there as my translator. Now, the young lady right beside me there in the white sweater, she is blind. And she had never visited a Church of Christ before. And she came and stayed the whole week, and she attended every class. And she was quite impressed that the respect that we tried to show for the Bible, the respect for authority. And I told you when I showed you the picture of Marcos, I told you that Marcos has three of the most spiritual young men I have ever seen in my life. And two of those boys that are in their teens, it is their goal that they're going to convert every one of their classmates. And they are setting up Bible classes for almost every night of the week. And this young blind girl was one of the students of Andreas. This is how they cooked my lunch. We had some fresh fish that was delicious. And we had some corn on the cob that was done in the oven on the wood-burning stove. We had some cornbread. And we had some baked potatoes, and I'll tell you what, it was mighty good eating. I loved not only the fresh fruit, I loved also the beauty of all the fresh flowers. So everywhere you turn, it looks like that there's somebody that's selling the fresh flowers. Bouquets are rather cheap, and so this is the flower market in Valdivia. here's more with grapes and cherries and blueberries and all kinds of the fresh fruit that's in the area. This is the fish market. Since that you're surrounded everywhere with the water, the boats come in early of a morning, they fish all night, and then they immediately sell the fish then in the market. Here is Andreas, and he's making some blackberry jam. So his fingers are all stained because he's got those blackberries in some kind of a little, it looked to me like a pair of nylon hose that he was squeezing and keeping the seed in the cloth and getting out all the juice and then putting the sugar and boiling it and making some jam, and it was great. Here's again one of the pretty parts on one of the streets in Linares. Now, other than Athens, Greece, I am convinced that Chile has more dogs than any other place I've ever been. I don't know what it is about Athens, Greece, and in Linares, Chile. Everywhere you turn, there's dogs. I believe they're some of the most lazy dogs I've ever seen. They're some of the most content dogs I've ever seen. I mean, you can go down there and lay on top of one of them and use him for a pillow if you want to. Is that he's not going to move. He's not going to use enough energy to bark at you. But everywhere, I mean, this is just the city park, but they're on the sidewalks. They're over by the stop signs. They're in front of the grocery store. They're all around people's houses. They're in front of the restaurants. I mean, everywhere you look, there's dogs all over. Some of the people make their livelihood by selling used clothing. They will buy a bale. Now, usually those bales either come from Europe, they come from Australia, or they come from the United States. And you buy a bale and you say, I want children's clothes, I want men's clothes, or I want women's clothes. And that's about all you get to choose. You don't know what's going to be in it. And so you just say, okay, I want a bale that's this big and this, you know. And so you spend a few $100 on a bale of used clothing, and then you get them home and you separate them and you divide them, and then you spread them out on the sidewalk, and then you start selling used clothing. Rather than standing on the corner begging, like I've seen a lot of people do in a lot of countries, is that I found an awful lot of people that were trying to make an honest living. This is a young college boy that he sits there with his guitar and has a pretty nice voice. And he sings and plays the guitar, hoping that somebody will drop him some coins. And so he is singing for tips. This is another most unusual drink. You can see that straw. Now, that is a plastic straw, but it is huge. It's a huge straw because what this is, you can see the bottom of it, that it looks like wet popcorn or peanuts. Really what that is wheat. And then you have an apricot, a pickled apricot. So it's really, really sweet. I've never had anything else like it, so that's all I can say about it. You know, you got wheat, you got apricot, you suck for a while, you chew for a while, and so eat the wheat, eat the apricot, but a pretty nice drink. This is Emilio, and he is a great, great preacher, and I worked with him then in Linares and stayed in his home. Now, Emilio used to be the pastor of this giant Pentecostal church. You remember me talking this morning about taking classes on how to speak in the unknown tongues? He used to try to teach that. And he used to try to convince himself that he could heal anybody of any illness. And he jokes about it now, laughs about it. He said, man, I was deceiving so many people. And that's the big church where he used to preach. And he fortunately learned the truth. And so he denounced all the error and he gave up the salary. And he left that church. And so now this is the back of his home. It's sort of like a dormitory or little apartments down through there. And so that's the back of his home. Then also inside his house, what we would use as our living room, he has converted the living room into the chapel. And that's where they have all their Bible classes, and that's how where that they have all of their worship. And so there's a welcome sign on the door, and then it's telling you that this is where that the Church of Christ meets. And this is the church that meets there in his home. And there is Emilio holding the arm of his wife. And so these are the brethren in that area. Now, while I was there, let's see, maybe I put it in, maybe I didn't, I don't remember. But there was a lot of evidence of the earthquake that hit this area about 2 years ago. A lot of the buildings they have completely torn down. A lot of the buildings they're trying to restore, they're trying to repair them. You can still see that some of the walls are cracked and torn. Even going into the church building, there's a big crack on the wall there. This is the bridge, and it is built to withstand earthquakes. Now, they have so many earthquakes. I mean, when you're building anything, you build it thinking about earthquakes. And so they build it in sections with those teeth so that when the earthquake comes, the bridge can move. And so you can see those teeth there that you've got a few inches. Now, the only problem is how strong is the earthquake? Now, you know, they give you all these numbers. Is it a 1.5 earthquake? Is it a 2? Is it a 3? Is it a 4? Is it a 5? And so this can withstand some of the smaller earthquakes, but the one that they had 2 years ago was a little bit too big. And so you can see back there in the back where that part of the bridge fell in, that there was a lot of damage that was done at that time. I love the fresh bread that's all over Chile, and you can go into any of the shops and you can buy. This is right on the sidewalk, just about a half of a block from Emilio's house. This guy comes every morning with his fresh fish, and so you can go out and you can buy the fresh fish. Behind him, about two more doors down, then we have this sweet little old lady that sits there, and she sells fresh vegetables. And if you want tomatoes, you want onions, potatoes, carrots, lettuce, cabbage, is that she's got a little garden out in the country, and she'll go out there and work and take care of all the vegetables and then bring them into town and sell them here on the sidewalk. We would say things like the 4th of July, that would be a holiday for us. Well, September the 18th is a holiday for them. And so that's the name of the street. And so as a result of that, that's the name of the congregation. So this is the 18th of September Street Church. Now, the preacher lives in the bottom part, and the two windows you see up at the top, that's what he has built then for the chapel. That is where that the church meets then, up at the top. And so it's not a big room, not a big building, but it accommodates them. Now, we did then, I think on the second night or so, there was standing room only. Every chair was full. People were lined up all around the wall in the back and all down the side on that wall. So we had a lot of visitors, and it was quite an exciting time to get to be with all of them. The San Felipe Church is now about 6 months old. The man that is standing on the far right, he was searching. He was asking questions. Everybody he would try to talk to, they would sort of say, we don't know. I mean, if you're wanting a Bible answer, you need to find somebody from the Church of Christ. But he didn't know anybody from the Church of Christ. He was talking to the Catholics. He was talking to the Pentecostals. He was talking to the Methodists. And then somebody told him, said, well, if you're wanting a Bible answer, said, you'll have to go to the Church of Christ. He felt that was a rather strange comment from members of some denomination. And so he started searching for a Church of Christ. And that's how he got in touch with Emilio. And Emilio sent him a bunch of literature to read. And Emilio intended that he might read one a day, and he refused to go to bed that night until he'd read every one of them. And then he called Emilio and he said, "We have to have a face-to-face Bible study." And so Emilio took the bus, went to his house. They had a marathon of a Bible study, and then he was baptized. And he said, "Now, can you stay all night? And tomorrow I'll start getting some of my friends together because they need to hear the gospel too." And they meet on Sunday, and then they have Bible study three nights a week because they're really serious about learning and about growing. This is the youngest of all the churches. Now, there is Emilio and Carlos. We had to buy tickets. We traveled two nights. I would go from point A to point B. I would preach at night, finish the gospel meeting, and then go get on the bus and try to sleep on the bus because it would be a 12-hour journey. It would travel while I'm sleeping all night, get to the next town the next day and ready to start the classes within an hour after I get there. And so here we are buying some of the tickets. We also used the train, some of the subways. This was the train going down to Valparaiso. Again, I was impressed with some of the people. Rather than trying to just beg, some of them try to earn an honest living. They try to get tips. This guy is playing the guitar, he is playing the harmonica, and he is tapping his foot. He has a tambourine down at his feet. So he's playing all three instruments, and I'll tell you, he was good. And so I didn't even mind giving him some of my coins as a reward for the entertainment that he provided. Now, another thing, and I've made several pictures, but I don't think I put any of them in the slideshow tonight. At almost every traffic light, when the cars stop, you've got one guy comes out there, and he's painted up like a mime, you know, painted with that white paint, and he does all kinds of weird things. You got another one out here that is juggling fire. You got another one that's juggling the balls and the bowling pins. You got another one that's doing magic tricks with rope. And they do all of these things to entertain you while you stopped at the traffic light, and then hoping that you'll toss them a few coins. And that's how that many of them are making their livelihood rather than being just a beggar. I guess we've all seen those signs. We'll work for food, and then you offer some of them a job and they don't want to work. And what I appreciated about these, they wanted to be out there working. This shows you the outside of the church building there at Emilio's place. I showed you the door a few moments ago. This is a taxi that is driven by one of the brothers. That's how he makes his livelihood. He's a taxi driver. He does not own the taxi. The first 25% of all of the money brought in goes to the taxi owner. And there is a minimum that you have to turn in. So if it's a slow day, it's possible you could work all day and not get to keep any of it because there is a minimum that you have to turn in. But if you're making good money, then you give a certain amount and then you start getting commission. And then after a certain amount, then that's where you start getting your money. But the taxi owner allowed him to paint Philippians 4:13. On the back of his taxi. And so that causes a lot of people to ask questions and a great way to get their attention. Now, when I finished up in Chile, is that then I bought the bus that we could travel, I bought the ticket that we could travel on this double-decker bus. This is how I'm going to cross over the mountains in order to get from Chile into Argentina. And so it's a rather crooked road. The bus does have to travel slow, and I am thankful for that because I started trying to count the curves, and this is the sign at curve 24, but there were 29 curves. And I mean, you just feel that the back of the bus is meeting the front of it. You're just going up and down and round and round and round. But we're crossing the famous Andes Mountains. And in this picture, if you will look, you can see the snow on top of the mountains. And this is the tallest mountain in the Americas. North America, Central America, South America. And beautiful, beautiful scenery as we go through here. We then finally arrive in Argentina. This is the bus terminal at De La Mercedes. Now, some of you hopefully will recognize the name of that city, because this is where David Rodriguez lives, that the church here, I think, helps support. I saw his report, at least back there on your bulletin board. And this is David and his good wife, Rosa. And they provided wonderful hospitality. She's a good cook. And I stayed in their home then for several days. This is the welcome sign coming into their house. They do not have a car. They have a motorcycle. David uses the motorcycle to go to Bible classes. Rosa uses the motorcycle to go grocery shopping. The children use the motorcycle to go to school. And so that little motorcycle is used for a whole lot of different things. Now, if it's within walking distance, they walk, because gasoline's expensive. But if it's going to be a far trip, then they'll use the motorcycle. This is what would have been the little garage at his house, but he has converted the garage then into the chapel, that this is where the church meets then for worship and for Bible classes. One afternoon, we had finished up a bunch of classes, and so we walked down to the city park, and we did silly things. I mean, we played three-legged race. We played the old-fashioned wheelbarrow race. And so now Jaime's got one of the boys on him, and I got one of the boys on me, and we're playing chicken, and all four of us wind up rolling in the grass. And just had a good time. I mean, again, they can't speak English. I can't speak Spanish. But we just had a great time together. There was probably 20 of us down at this park just having a really, really good time. Now, we also visited the church at President Durque. And here are two of the preachers. This is a father and son. And both of them are helping to preach here at the Durque Church. And this is the church building for the Durque Church. And this is what it looks like inside. This is one of the larger, maybe one of the nicer buildings. And this is Elena Retora. She was one of the first Christians that we know of in Argentina. And it was just a joy to sit with her using a translator. I was able to ask her 100 questions. I was able to take notes. I now have it, a pretty good document that gives me the history of what preacher did what, when, and where, and who became a Christian, how the church got started here. And so now I have a map so that I know where all of the churches are all over Argentina. There's about 6 good churches in Buenos Aires. They've asked if I could come back next year and preach for all 6 of them. I don't know that that's going to fit into the schedule, but we've at least penciled it in just to see if it could be done. But she's a joy to be with. This is the Pilar church building, and the door locks, and you disassemble it, and then you crawl through, and this is one of the preachers there. This is Juan Carlos Costa, and he's one of the older preachers in the country. And then he has another man that works with him. Neither one of them are fully supported to work as a preacher. They just share the duties, and they're happy to do that. This is Jonathan. We would pronounce it that way, Jonathan. The way it's spelled, it doesn't have the H in it. That's Spanish for you. And this is his mommy, Ann. And I don't think I've ever met a teenager that acts like he loves his mama any more than Jonathan does. I mean, he gives her a hug and a kiss when he's going to school. He comes back then for lunch. He gives her a hug and a kiss. He eats something. Then he goes to work. He gives her a hug and a kiss. He comes back in the afternoon. He gives her a hug and a kiss. And then after Bible study, he gives her a hug and a kiss. They're just... But I'll tell you, the whole country of Argentina is that way. And I'll tell you what, I'm not used to kissing men. And it's not just on one cheek, you're supposed to kiss both cheeks. And some of those guys haven't shaved for 3 or 4 days. And I guess the only other country I've seen as much kissing among the men's in Egypt. But boy, they sure do hug and they sure do kiss. Now, when you enter the building, now even as big as this is tonight, if this church was in Argentina, you can go out and you have given everybody a double kiss. You got to give one on both cheeks. And so it's just quite interesting. This is the Pilar Church. The young gal right there in the front, she lived in California for several years. And so she speaks great English. And matter of fact, I've gotten several emails and she's requested as a friend on Facebook. And that's her fiancé sitting there beside her. The young guy on the other side of her in the white shirt, he is from Peru and has recently moved then to Argentina. He is a Christian already and is working to help in Bible classes with the church. This is my notes. I put it as the second widest river in the world. Now, I didn't want to cause a major argument. Some of the people in Argentina will tell you this one is the widest river in the world. But from everything I'm able to read, the Amazon is the biggest one. And so from my notes, I put this as the second widest. Now, this is standing on the bridge looking down. If you look straight across, you cannot see the other side of the river. I mean, it is a monster of a river. And I will accept that it is the second widest. In the USA, we have the White House. In Buenos Aires, they have the Pink House. This is where the president lives. And so, excuse me, this is the palace. And I shot this out the window. We were just driving by here one day, didn't get to stop, didn't get to go around it very close, but that is the Pink House. A lot of the restaurants are painted up very colorful. This is a pizzeria. They use multiple colors. And my last picture here, this is the Caminito. This is the area, if you've seen it on television, if you know anything about Argentina, you know they love their tango. And this is the neighborhood that tango was invented. And so you've got lots and lots of shops and lots of restaurants. This is your typical tourist trap. This is where you go and buy your T-shirts and buy your key rings and buy your magnets and buy all of your other little trinkets. But all of every building for about 5 blocks has every kind of colored paint that you can think of. This is the area where that the artists go, and they'll sit up on the sidewalk and they'll paint and they'll draw and they'll sell all of their stuff out here. So it's a nice place to visit. But the thing that's so wonderful about Argentina and that's the Christians and getting to work with the churches. So I hope that gives you some idea as to the kind of work in both of those countries, Chile and in Argentina. They ask that I express my thanks to you for your interest in the work that David Rodriguez is doing, and that they request your continuous prayers that the work can continue to flourish, that more souls can be saved, that good can be done. I appreciate your interest in this. I appreciate your giving me the opportunity to talk about it. And I hope that this will be beneficial in some way. I love teaching. Whether I'm in the USA, whether I'm in Russia, whether I'm in Chile, I love teaching. I want to go to heaven. And I want other people to go to heaven. And you can't go to heaven if you don't know the gospel. And so I'm glad for the opportunity of getting to teach in some of these countries. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, I'd like to see you become a Christian. I want you to have the hope of going to heaven. Ephesians 2 describes those that don't have that hope. Paul says, without hope, without God, without Jesus, an alien. That sounds very sad. I'd like for you to be a citizen of the kingdom. If you've never obeyed, would you be willing to obey tonight? Will you repent of your sins, confess your faith in Christ, and will you be baptized tonight that your sins can be washed away? If you're here as a Christian but you've been unfaithful, would you repent of that? Would you be willing to start all over again? Let us know of any way that we could assist you and encourage you while together we stand and sing.